Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, with your host and the founder of the Brain Injury Radio Network, Craig Sedilia.
Well, good evening, everybody. I hope everybody is just having a wonderful Monday. And it's kind of ironic that I like to do Mondays, but Monday is my favorite day to do a show, I guess. Beginning of the week, and if folks are hearing me okay out there, just say you're hearing me okay, because I got my headset. I couldn't get to work tonight, and so I am trying a different headset, and I hope I'm coming in loud and clear, because obviously I can't hear myself, although a lot of people say I like to hear myself talking, but, you know, I think we all do. So tonight's show is going to be pretty incredible. We have some really good guests. Our first hour tonight, I hope I get my hours correct here, we are going to have a previous host and now published author, I might add, Ashok Rajamani, and he wrote a book called The Day My Brain Exploded. I believe that's what it's called. And so he's going to be on here shortly as well. And again, on our first hour, we are going to be having Robert Thornton. I don't know how many of you know him. His girlfriend, wife, I'm not sure who it was. Stroke, aneurysm, can't remember. He invented, it's called subluxation sling, and it's an incredible device, and he's going to talk a little bit about it. And then our second hour, we're going to have Cheryl Green. For those of you know, she's an incredible motivator out there. She's working on some documentary films. She's going to talk a little bit about, you know, how she got shuffled through the system, and she's going to talk about mentors and the great folks who came along and how she's passing it on, and she's working with people, getting them to learn to become film producers or video producers. I'm guessing it's film or video, and I'm sorry, I'm a little flustered here, because don't you just hate it when technology doesn't work? And I want to get into a little bit on my topic before I bring on any guests tonight, but the reason I wrote this topic, my journey, like most survivors' journey, was awful. But I think my case, and I'm sure everyone out there, we all have our exceptional problems. I mean, things that were just so unreasonable. It wasn't unreasonable enough that my family couldn't understand. It wasn't unreasonable enough that people that I worked with couldn't understand. You know, and that I can all let go. But when I started looking for help in my state, there was no real groups over here. And mind you, the organization that was doing groups was around for, 30 years. And they didn't have enough infrastructure to hold it together. And so anytime anyone gets anything good going, they were right there to swoop on it. And I actually approached this organization, and it's, I am writing a book. I swore I'd never do it, but I actually have written several books. A couple will never come out. But two that I'm thinking I'm going to, one that I will for sure, which is called Mind Funk, and it's kind of about my childhood and my father. My father's an interesting story, and you guys are just going to have to read about that, but very demented man. But he's my father. He defeated somebody, and I hate to be that cold, but that's all he ever was. My grandma was my father and my mother, and she was the one that raised me, and so it took me a long time to figure that she was a blessing rather than, I don't know what I thought when I was growing up, but I had some anger issues because my parents not being around. But anyway, so I go to this organization. I wanted to start a group. I thought, wow, you know, I put a Craigslist list ad out. I found a couple survivors, needed a little help starting a group, and you never guess what this person said. And I have to tell you, he was the best person to work with in the state. He didn't make the most money for this organization, but his words to me, show me the money. That's going to be the name of my book. It's going to be called Show Me the Money, and it's my journey in brain injury. And every time they go after money, it irritates me. and done. It wouldn't irritate me so much if they did something with that money that was valuable. A lot of folks in my state put a lot of hard work into passing legislation to create money. Little did we know that they were going to be getting the bulk of it. You know, I don't know that we would have done that. And we may do a surprise call to Tommy Mann, and he's the act was actually named after him. It's the Tommy Manning Act here in Washington. And we went and revised it even. We put our heart and soul in. Not one person helped any of us with gas money, lodging. It was us folks in poverty that actually got this bill passed. Believe it or not, guys out there, your legislators want to hear from you. And that's what I find amazing. I'm known in my state for blue cards. What we do is we get these little blue cards, and I thought they were effective. And so they have our legislative agenda on them, and people sign their names, maybe put a little thing on it. Well, I'm guessing, you know, tens of thousands of these blue cards going into our state capitol every year, they start getting redundant. And so people kind of just start ignoring them. And so as I got to know some legislators better, they kind of sat down and they explained, you know, that one personal letter that's handwritten or typed, whatever it is, that one personal letter means more than 1,000 of them blue cards. That one personal email means more than those emails that I send to all, with 147 legislators at the same time. I get busy. I don't want to email all 147 legislators all the time. But so I do a bulk email to them, and I guess they don't pay too much attention to it. Tell you what, though, when we do a rally of 1,000-plus people on their front steps, they kind of pay attention to me. And not me, it's us. And I do that, and that's something we all do out there. We've got to get rid of the M word, the me word, because it isn't about any one of us, because any one of us does not have the power to make the change that needs to happen. Only together can this power happen. I mean, we can all be great, and we all are, and I'm finding that a lot of incredible geniusness going on in the survivor community, and it just blows my mind how many capable people there are out there that are doing these incredible things. A zillion books. I think there are only a couple of books in 06, but there's a zillion books out there, and find that one book that maybe fits you, because it is so important that you understand what you need. But more important, and I'm going to put this offer out to anyone, especially in the state of Washington and Oregon, if you don't have a support group in your area or you don't like a support group in your area, call me. And I'll give you my 800 number. It's 888-308-6804. We will help you get a group going. We will find you a place, find you the funding. We need groups. And no matter what it takes, need to have people in your lives. And peer support was the first time that I really felt that I had some sanity. And before I put this first Craigslist ad in, I did not know what Craigslist really was. And so I put an ad in, and I didn't know what kind of people can you call or Skype. So no, anyway, so I see somebody's not here. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to pay attention to the chat, but I can't help it. It just gets a flutter in there. But anyway, after the normal folks that come through there, and I'm not going to get into the different types of emails, but I met that one first survivor and face-to-face. And then thank God I did. I think it was Kim that was telling me it was like a decade and a half before she met her first survivor. And I don't know what I would have done for 15 years not knowing that I wasn't losing my mind. But once I met that first survivor, we had a lot in common. It was pretty darn incredible. It felt pretty good. We were both kind of nutty, you know, but I'll even give myself fairness. I was very nutty before my injury, so it's not anything different that I'm nutty, or people maybe say I have OCD or ADHD or whatever. Yeah, so I have some energy issues, I always have. I like to be busy. It made it a lot tougher with my brain injury because I used to remember multiple things. I'm talking, you know, appointment after appointment for weeks on end. I could remember it in my memory. Then all of a sudden, I couldn't remember as well. Well, actually, I couldn't remember hardly at all. I was lucky to get one or two appointments right a week. But it took a long time to realize that. And God, once my everything started healing, I think the biggest thing that hurt was the rotator cuff. I think that was the thing that took the longest. And it even feels kind of out of whack to this day, and I have a little part in my toe that I think still broke and hurts. But once all those things healed up, I thought I was fine too. And you know what? This is probably about 6 months maybe. That's when the symptoms started happening. And oh, man, they diagnosed me with bipolar disorder. They diagnosed me with childhood ADHD. Imagine that. I'm 33 years old, and now they're diagnosing me. And I find that all quite interesting. I had an interesting journey, you know, because there was no doubt that I had head trauma because of the coma and post-amnesia. And the neurologist knew I had a traumatic brain injury, so he referred me into our state. We go to neuropsychologists, so he referred me to that. And we went in, me and my wife at that time, and we were struggling. Can you imagine that? You know, 6 months of me being up, we were kind of struggling, so we went in. We really wanted to try to make it work, and we tried, but he wasn't there. The neuropsychologist wasn't there to see us. There was just one lone person there, and she stayed around. She was actually from one of the mental institutions in our state, and she worked there, and she was said, I can help you. I can do some marriage counseling with you guys. Now, I had no clue that wasn't a good idea, but anyway, we went to marriage counseling. It had to be a couple of months. He started to realize, oh, man, there's something more here than meets the eye, and so finally, we got an appointment with a neuropsychologist, and actually, it's an appointment. They finally did the assessment. I never had the appointment with the neuropsychologist until actually a year and maybe a year and 2 months. I'm not going to mention his name. And what's kind of ironic, he left his practice to start a band. Not a very good one, too, I might add, but a band. And he asked me, I hope you got some benefit from marriage counseling. And oh, so sorry, it looks like your paperwork fell through to the cracks. If I would have known then what I know now, I don't know where I would have been with that. Probably you would have had a lot more problems than I did. And so I see the chat opening, and I will say in a minute, I kind of don't look at the chat, and I'm terrible at that. People get mad at me. Did you see what I said? But I'm going to repeat the 800 number. It's 888, so not 800, 888-308. Oh, now, Sarah, see what you made me do? I got thinking about it too hard, and I can't remember. 888-308-6804, and that is our toll-free line. And if you need to start a group in your area, the only requirements that our organization has, it has to be survivor-led. You can have an advisor in your groups, but we want survivor-led groups. And the reason being is I'm a firm believer if I would have met a survivor sooner or had a group of survivors, my outcome wouldn't have taken as long. It wouldn't have been as harsh. I wouldn't have destroyed so much of my life. We were talking last night, or they were talking last night, what a wonderful show, about the suicidal tendencies. The system made me suicidal. The system that I went to look for to get help actually made me feel worse. And every time I went to them, it got worse and worse and worse. And I don't know how to describe it. Somebody's trying to call in on the computer line right now. I'm sorry. I don't have anyone answering the phone, and I am on the show. So if you're calling from the 302, why don't you call? Let me give you another number to call if you're trying to get on the show. It's 424-243-9540. They found the number, and they called the 800 line. But anyway, I lost my train of thought because my 800 line rang. But it's the system that hurts us sometimes more than helps us. And that's kind of why I thought, we really need to advocate for this. And that's when I met Tommy Manning. And Tommy Manning was already doing this, and a gal named Constance Constance Miller. And she does BrainInjury.com. And it was these folks that really advocated for this change. And Constance Miller, to this day, still takes more phone calls for free than the folks that are getting a $500,000 contract. People just know who she is. And she applied for the grant. She didn't get it. I never applied for it. Another organization applied for it. They didn't get it. We had it split up. We had a project. It was half, you know, kind of resource coordination, and then half phone help and online resources. And so we thought it would be merged. It got more money into it. And, you know, 2 years has gone by, and there's not one resource on there. And I'll tell you what made me mad. I brought this up past year and a half, and they go, oh, I know it makes you mad, and I hate it when people call me honey. I know it makes you mad, honey, but, you know, you people, when you're having these things, you can't make these decisions. Let us pick the best two for you. We make sure we give you good ones, and I don't trust these folks. I'm sorry, I wish I did, and it's almost to the point now where I don't even want to have anything to do with the money that our states create, and trust me, it's not that much money we get in our system, but I'm seriously thinking of just figuring out how to get sponsorship, keep my support groups going, because how can you fight a system that you're actually still getting some money in? Just kind of look, doesn't look so clean, and but anyway, this organization has been around for a long time, and I don't know which number, and I'm not sure if this is going to be a choke, but I'm going to bring them on here in a second if it is. If you're from the 304, I'm hoping you are, 304, you're going to be the next one. I'm looking at my phone numbers of other people and making sure. Nope, that's not. That is actually, well, let's bring Robert on. And so Robert here in a second, and hang on there, so Robert, I put your mic live, but Robert and created an invention, and I'm going to get back to my story here in a little bit, but he created an invention to help ease the pain, and I didn't get a chance to look at the video. It's been one of them crazy days, but from what I understand, it's something that is amazing, and with that amazingness, and I think I got it, and Robert, are you with me now?
Hello?
Hello. Hello. How are you tonight, Robert?
Pretty good. Not too bad. A little chilly out here, but we're doing all right.
So out here, was it Connecticut or
No,
somewhere
we're
out
West,
there.
West Virginia.
Okay. So how are support groups in your area? Is West Virginia a good place to have a support group?
Honestly, most of the support that Sharon has been receiving has been from online communities more than local, actually physically being in groups. She is a member of quite a few online support groups. Does that answer your question?
Did she try any of the local support groups at all? Or?
Well, actually, nobody actually even recommended any. And we never really pursued looking for them because we've been talking to some really great people online, and like I said, no, her counselors or nothing, nobody ever offered any support group information.
So you, and I'm going to mess this up, it is a subluxation sling?
Yeah, well, most stroke patients, or a lot of them anyhow, due to the stroke, their shoulder, for lack of a better word, it's like dislocated. It's a sublux. It drops down. It pinches all the nerves, and it causes intense pain. It causes the hand to swell. And the pain is so bad that it doesn't let them get any good quality rehabilitation on most of their body because they're like, if they're trying to walk again, their arm still moves. Everything that they do, because that shoulder hangs down, is really detrimental to their rehabilitation process.
And so what made you invent this then? What gave you the idea? I know why you invented it, because, you know, you see your significant other in pain, you know, you obviously want to help, but what gave you the idea to invent it?
Well, when she was in the hospital, I was seeing her therapist. They would lay her down on this bed mat thing, and they would hold her shoulder up into place, and the pain would go away. Well, I mean, you're talking, she's taking like an Oxycontin every 4 hours for the pain. And the only time she wasn't in pain is when the therapist would hold her shoulder in the right position, and then, poof, she didn't have any pain. But I asked them, I said, well, why don't we just get a sling to hold the arm in place? And they said that they don't recommend any, and nobody would. recommend any, because most of the slings that are out there cause other forms of muscle atrophy. There's like the Givemore has a hard plastic cuff in the hand. There's just so many examples of slings that people have attempted to use to help with the subluxed shoulder, and basically none of the doctors would recommend any. Well, you know, when I had a free chance, I'd get on the computer and I started looking for myself, because I saw her pain be relieved and all it needed was the shoulder to be held in the right position. And the doctors were right. There wasn't any out there. I couldn't find anything. Every time I approached them with one that I would find, they wouldn't let me put it on her, and they would explain to me why they wouldn't let me put it on her, and it made lots of sense. You know, because a lot of them did more damage than it did good. The common practice with the stroke patients was basically to leave the arm, for lack of a better word, hang there, I guess. And they just had to work through the pain and sort of get used to it. And, well, when she got into her home therapy, she had therapists coming all the time. And I just, you know, I just couldn't take it. I was watching the therapist hold her shoulder in place, the pain go away, so I started making them. And I made 10, 11 of them. And the therapist kept telling me what was wrong here, what was wrong there, what it needed to do. And like I said, we worked through everything until the therapist were ecstatic. I put it on, the last one I made for her, I put it on her, and the pain went away virtually instantly. And she went, and within 2 weeks, was taking zero pain medication whatsoever. And her recovery for her whole body, not just the shoulder, but she got tremendous amount of therapy after that for her arm and her hand and all that. She started being able to use it again. But even her walking therapy and everything, because it, no matter what she did, it held the shoulder where it needed to be to start to heal and recover. And all the doctors and stuff was going crazy over it. And they said, you know, the world needs this sling. He said, if it works for half the people out there as well as it does for her, I need to share it with the world. And I went and I got a patent on it, and we started making them, and we've donated over 200 of them around the world already, and they've just been doing remarkable things for people. I don't get a chance, because we don't have a lot of money and we fund all this ourselves. We don't have we don't have a travel budget or anything, but I had the opportunity to take one to a local therapist center, huge facility. They treated me like royalty when I went in there, and they wanted me to show them how it worked, and they saw the newspaper articles about it, and they were really interested in it. And it was a really touching moment when there was a gentleman there that had been, he had his stroke in 2009, and they brought him out there and had me put the sling on him. And he gets this weird look on his face, and his therapist that's been dealing with him for years is standing beside his bed, and he gets this strange look on his face, and his therapist starts to get worried, and they're asking, what's wrong, what's wrong? And basically he was tearing up, and he said this is the first time that he was out of pain since he experienced his stroke in 2009. And even some of the therapists teared up a little bit, you know, watching it happen live right there in front of them.
I was noticing that you don't have a website.
Yes, I do. Subluxsling.com.
Oh, okay, awesome. Say that real slow so the folks will post it in the chat room. Say it real slow so everybody gets it, so they can buy it if they need to.
I'll spell it out. SubluxSling.com. SubluxSling.com.
Okay. I think that would help rotator cuffs too, it sounds like.
Oh, man. It's been helping sports injury patients. We tried to get one on Ken Rothenberger in Pittsburgh this year, but we couldn't get through to him. I'm a Steelers fan myself, born and raised in that area, and I really think that the outcome of that football game this year, the season would have been better if our sling would have been on him. But it's actually helped quite a few people with torn rotator cuffs, and people, we've been donating them, and they've been finding so many different uses for them, for more than just sublux sling, although they do amazing things for stroke patients, terminal brain injury patients, torn rotator cuffs. There's the list is on, go on and on and on and on. It just because it gives the shoulder an off, it holds it where it needs to be and lets the shoulder heal, but you still end up with full range of motion. You can use, when our sling is on, you can actually do everything. You can raise your arm up over your head. You can, you have full range of motion, no restriction whatsoever. You can wear clothes over it. You can put a coat over it. You can wear it to bed at night. So many stroke patients suffer from lack of sleep at night because of the pain that's caused from their shoulder. And I get so many responses from them that they get their first good night's sleep since they've had their stroke because the shoulder being in the right position lets them, you know, alleviate the pain and they get to sleep. It's amazing what it's been doing for people.
And how much does one of these things cost, folks? I mean, they can't afford it. What does something like that run?
Well, we're trying to get it. Okay, now I have a program that I'm working with a company called MedStarts, and we're trying to get money donated so that we can give them for low-income people, we can give it to them for free. We're really trying this program out so that, because most of the, I find that most stroke patients, they go through a rough time. They start losing their insurance, and you get Medicaid and all that. And once the insurance companies, Medicaid and Medicare, start accepting this sling as common practice, then everybody that needs one will have one. For the time being, it's going to take me a couple years to get all the paperwork straightened out, to get them to actually recognize it and start using it like it should be used. And so right now we have a program through MedStarts where we're trying to get donations so we can donate them to the people that need one but can't afford one. And we also, if you go to our site, there's a couple places on our site. If you just want to buy one, they're $89, and there's a PayPal button on our site, a few different places to just out and out buy one. But we're really hoping that in the really near future, when I say near future, 2 to 3 years from now, that the insurance companies will recognize the benefits, because all the doctors and physicians and therapists, and we've been talking to hundreds of them all over the place, and everybody has the same consensus that if this sling was put on a stroke patient within 72 hours of their stroke before they initially tried to sit up and move, the shoulder, it would help the shoulder to never become dislocated. You know, it would start solving the problem before it had a chance to exist, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. You hunch over, you're going to stay hunched. You know, it's hard to get back the other direction once you get going that direction.
Yeah, exactly. Right after the stroke, before they sit up for the first time, if they had that shoulder braced, then they wouldn't end up with a subluxed shoulder as they go through their therapy. You know, it's that initial when they sit up for the first time and they're trying to move and that shoulder drops down, they are in instant pain from that moment. And that's like 72 hours after the stroke and their recovery is starting. But like I said, you can buy them now, but we're really hoping to, you know, get funding so people can get them donated to them, and also that get the government and stuff to acknowledge its benefits. When you look at our site, you'll find there's a lot of testimonials from people that have wore them, from therapists. There's newspaper articles about it. It's sort of standing the stroke rehab world on its ear. It's changing everything because all the therapy that they need improves once they get their pain managed.
After 4 months, my
suspicion
was gone.
Yes, yeah, this is Sharon, who I've made the thing for, sitting here with me. And
hello.
Hi, Sharon.
Here.
Yes.
Hey. When I had that sling first put on me, I would not let Robert take it off. It made such a huge difference. And after 4 months of wearing it, I had 3 inches, almost 4 inches, between my rotator cuff and my humerus. It was hanging down that far. And after 4 months, there was no gap at all. It moved back into place because it had been held in place for so long.
And
my muscles, through my working out with my rehab people, were beginning to hold my arm back in place.
And she very rarely even needs to wear it now. Only for long walks and long trips does she even put the sling on.
Incredible. And see, we hold the answers, because we know how to fix ourselves if we're as bright as you. But we hold the answers. So any resistance from people as you're promoting this? What kind of resistance are people?
Everywhere. Even the first thing that I did when she got out of rehab is after I started making them, that was the first place I went back to was when she was in outpatient rehab, and I donated some to them. And honestly, I feel like Columbus trying to tell the world that the world isn't flat, that it's round, because most of the therapists out there and everybody has been sort of programmed to believe that there is no sling that works for a subluxation shoulder, period. And that's the battle. Patients are very receptive to it. Patients love it. They're willing to try it. But getting the therapist and doctors, getting the first ones to actually acknowledge its benefits was a tough one because, like I said, they swore up and down that they were taught that none existed.
And they were worried about liability, of all things.
Yes. And, yeah, the medical community has been my largest obstacle. The patients, they've been receptive, oh my. I mean, I have yet to have one single negative response from anybody that has gotten one and used it so far. Except for, I take that back, we did have one lady, she didn't understand how to order it, and she ordered the wrong size, and we sent her the right size. But other than that, no complaints.
Awesome. So I'm gonna look at the chat, guys. If you guys have any questions, I kicked myself out of the chat. I hate it when I do that. So if you have any questions, go ahead and ask them. Give me 1 second to open back up my chat. I am a bad host. I cannot multitask. I can't run two computers in one panel and I do that all the time. I kick myself out. It's a good thing I don't hang up on the show because it would close the whole show. So if you ask a question, does this help rotator cuff? Somebody's asking.
We have one person that had ended up getting one, and they had a rotator cuff injury. And the only thing, I'm not a doctor, okay, so the only thing I can really say is it helped them. They had sustained a rotator cuff injury, and they got the sling soon enough afterwards that it held the shoulder in place and it helped it heal properly. But now, as far as a rotator cuff injury that's been for a length of time, we have another customer that had gotten one, and he had a forward rotator cuff for like 8 years, and it didn't help heal it, but it helped him with his day-to-day activities as far as it started. It held it in place, sort of like the muscle that was bad. It sort of helped replace it a little bit, and he was just delighted that it improved his day-to-day activities. And we even have one lady, you can see on our site, her name is Donna Slepp, she has horses, and she couldn't feed them or nothing until she got our sling. And then after that, it helped her, and it has pictures of this hill she climbs up that's all icy and stuff. And hers was a tour rotator cuff, I believe, and it helped her tremendously. And she was 7 years, I think, or was it 7 years? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was 7 years post-stroke with her. So it will help. It's, as far as what I've known, everybody so far said yes, it would help that.
Okay, so they're asking in the chat, and Jennifer, I see you typing. Say the website one more time. They're asking, now you got people interested. Say it one more time real slow, and Jennifer, if you could type it in the chat as he's saying it, that'd be awesome.
Okay, S as in Sam, U as in you, as in other, B as in boy, L as in Larry, U as in under, X as in X-rated, S as in Sam, L as in Linda, I as in Indian, N as in no, G as in girl, .com. Did you get that?
I'm going to see. So she's got SUBLUX sling.com.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, it's in there.
Yeah.
And I'll put a link on our websites under resources, too, and hopefully it'll drive some people your way.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of information on our site. Every time, you know, I try to put as much on there as I can. There's all sorts of people that's blogged about it, a lot of people that's experienced it. There's been a few newspaper articles done about it, you know, and I add to it every time something happens. I put it out there to try to keep everybody informed. And there's a couple videos on showing you how to put it on and how to adjust it and how it works. There's a video you'll find on my homepage at the bottom that links you to the MedStarts program that we're trying to get donations to get it out to people that need it. There's testimonial pages. There's blog pages. Just, you know, I try to just, when people say stuff and experience things, I try to get it on there at least once or twice a week so that people know that it's actually, they're sharing their experiences.
Absolutely. And so I they must have something wrong. They say, hey, guys, type in http://, and then www. Some sites are funny that way. They're saying they got 404 error not found.
Okay, don't type nothing in, just the subluxsling.com. If you put the www on there, it gives you that 404 code.
Oh, okay. So try that, guys. Just put it in just like that, and
just put it in the search point, Google bar, subluxsling.com, and the first 20 places you see is probably us. Or you can go to Google and just put in Sublux Sling or Sublux Shoulder or Sublux anything, and we're like the first 20 places that pop up. Or you know, when you put in Sublux Sling or Sublux Shoulder or Shoulder Subluxation in Google, we come up, our video shows up, our YouTube video is there, all the different articles and blogs, there's just oodles of them.
Yeah, they got it in there. They got your link. It's HTTPS. It's the new one. So, yeah, they got it working.
Okay. Great. And there's also a Facebook page, subluxsling.com on Facebook. And like I said, it's been helping so many people out. It's basically incredible. It makes Sharon feel so much better about having her stroke. I mean, there's no good thing as a stroke, but she feels better knowing that all these people are getting help because of what she went through. That, you know, it helps her accept it and cope with it a good bit more.
It was very difficult for me to understand when I heard the numbers of how many strokes are in the United States and half of them result in sublux. And they haven't come up with anything for us yet.
That's crazy.
It kind of makes you crazy too. But I just want this to get out so much. I don't want anybody to be in that kind of pain if they don't have to be. And they don't.
Yeah, that's less than the price of a couple months of the prescription of the drugs that are going to mess you up to numb it.
Oh, man. I mean, well, everybody that's tried it, like there's a Mike Whelan, he's a reporter for an Idaho newspaper, and if you read his news story article that he did about it, he put it on and the pain went away. He actually is off pain meds, and he was so impressed he had to write the news article about it, and plus he submitted news articles all over the country to like the New York Times and stuff, which I don't know if they've ever picked them up and actually printed them. But he spread it all over the world. He was so impressed with the pain management that it gave him. He could live his life again.
Oh, yeah, and the pain meds, they don't help because you end up hurting yourself because you're numb. And you usually end up making things like that worse in the long run with that.
It doesn't help with depression.
Yeah. And the therapy, I mean, you've got to think about your shoulder. If it's hanging down, it's hard. I was with her by her side from the moment she had her stroke, and I was right there for every single therapy. And I'm a very observant person. I've always been inventing things all my life, creating things and helping solve problems. And I was watching what she was going through, and it's just the pain was – I don't know how she barely could take it, you know, because everything they tried to do, they even would lay her down on a mat thing and try to move her leg, but you think about it, your whole torso moves when you're moving any part of your body. And, you know, so no matter what they were doing, for her to get any therapy, they just had to give her more and stronger drugs and more, you know, just numb her to where she could could actually cope with just trying to stand up and stuff, and they're having her shoulder falling down and all the pain. Yeah, I mean, it was ridiculous. I mean, I watched every bit of it. They put her on this bicycle thing, and she couldn't barely use it because, you know, she's trying to pedal and her arm's moving just because of her torso moving. And when she got here at the house, I got her a bicycle thing, put the sling on her, and she was sitting on that thing and going and pedaling for an hour at a time just for exercise. Where when she was in the therapy, she couldn't do it for more than, like, 3 minute sessions and then have to stop. And then she'd do it another 3 minutes and have to stop because the pain was too unbearable.
The headaches, I know, any type of pain, it just makes life that much more miserable. When you're in pain, it intensifies the head injury.
Yeah, and everybody that's had a stroke understands or should understand that the biggest key to recovery is exercise and movement and getting your muscles to learn how to operate properly again. And if you can't get the therapy you need, you can't get the exercises you need because you're in pain, then you start getting muscle atrophy. And the farther you progress with that, the less chance you're going to get a full recovery just because of the pain that you're experiencing.
You don't want to move.
Right. Now, yeah, it makes it you can't move. It's not that you don't want to. You can't move. It literally shocks our nervous system.
Exactly. And like I said, I was watching her go through all that, and she couldn't move her arm at all without wincing in pain and crying all the time. But once she got that sling on, buddy, that was it. She was moving her arm. She was going to therapy. She started picking blocks up with her fingers and putting them in the little thingies. And she was moving count and change in the therapy and stuff, and she couldn't do any of that until she got the pain under control in her shoulder.
Yeah. I was so proud and so happy the day that I was able to reach and grab a quarter out of my therapist's hand. That was amazing to me. And when I could finally wash my own hair with both hands, wow. The simple little things we take for granted every day.
Absolutely. Well, you know, God bless you for inventing that because, you know, it's the people who need it that do the greatest inventions. And one of my greatest heroes as far as a person with kind of a significant physical disability, a lot of people don't remember this, but Thomas Jefferson, you know, he had some stride problems. And, you know, he was a farmer. And so he invented most of the farming equipment to this day that we still use, and he became the best farmer. You know, he went from the worst to the best, but because he accommodated himself and thought outside of the box, and the cedar and the whatever you call that thing that locks the stuff down, we still use his inventions to this day, you know, almost 200 years later.
And we've had a lot of requests for different things, and we're making the slings right now, but I'm also in the middle of designing. I hear a lot of them asking me about their hands and the fingers and getting the muscle things to work. And I've studied all the equipment out there that they have for that, and I've come up with what I would consider a better, more functional design. And maybe in a few months we'll have that out there for the public also.
So I got one more question here. It says, my shoulder blade, et cetera, was crushed in the accident. It healed back together in my coma before any surgery could be done. Would this still help me?
Well, like I said, I'm not a doctor, but if it helps anybody that has a problem with their shoulder dropping down when they're up moving, you know, and if after the surgery, like this one woman actually drove here and she was in a car accident and she couldn't lift her arm up past level because it was like felt like it was hitting something, like it healed crooked. And she came here and she wanted to know if it would help her shoulder pain because it would hit and cause her pain. And we put it on her and she actually held her head straight up, her hand straight up over her head and pulled it back down and said it wasn't any pain and paid for the sling. And she emails us like once a month to say how great it is now that she can. She works a farm right here in West Virginia. And she can actually haul firewood now and all this. And it helped her. That's all I can say. Like I said, I find I'm real reserved about giving medical advice because I'm not a doctor. I just saw a problem and tried to solve it. You know, if that makes any sense.
That makes a lot of sense, and you know, we thank you for your invention. And, you know, anything that makes our life a little bit easier, or a lot bit easier in this case, especially $90. How many of us have spent $90 on something in hopes that it would help a little bit?
Right. I've been hearing so many stories of that, where you know, hey, I've tried every sling out there, and none of them work. You know, and you know, yeah, and most people say that we're selling them too cheap because we're really not making much money off of them even when we do sell them, because I really firmly believe that I'm a karma person, man. You know, you pay it forward. And as far as I'm concerned, we're selling it at a price that we barely make anything off it. It barely covers what it costs for us to make them, but eventually we will be able to sell them for more when insurance companies and stuff pick them up. But we want to make, we're trying really hard so that people that don't have a lot of money, that lost their insurance, stand some sort of chance of getting one. You know, that's why you know, $90, $89. It's you know, people, you know, I've been approached by a few different manufacturing companies, and they wanted to help me and take over and all this, but they wanted to sell the sling for $250. And I told them, I said, that's not fair to the people that can't afford one between now and time the insurance companies pick it up. I said that, you know, there's too many people out there that need one right now, and I can't bring myself to deal with those kind of people until I know that we're offering them so that the most people that can get one can get one. You know, the money, yeah, that'll come someday. You know, I'm trying to keep it as cheap as I possibly can.
Well, I like how you think, because I can't tell you how many people wanted to help me in that way, and not in my predicament. You know, people who are in big business, and they see money. Anytime something good comes, they want it because it means money, and then the help don't happen. Money doesn't create help. People create help.
Right.
Yep.
Any closing comments? Because fascinating stuff. I'm gonna want to bring on some other callers.
The only thing I can say is check out our site, and there's a phone number on that site. And my name is Robert Thornton. And that phone number is my cell phone number. If you need advice, if you can't afford one, don't hesitate to call me, and I'll talk to you, and I'll try to answer any question that you have, and give you. You know, help you out in any way I can. But that is my actual cell phone number on that site right there. So.
If somebody
be careful. You're going to be up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week pretty soon.
Well, my phone does have an off button.
Yeah, it's hard to turn it off, I learned. And
Well, I mean, people, especially now that we've been giving them out and stuff, and I can spend an hour talking about the UK and the problems they're having over there. But they're in a different time zone, and I've been dealing with a lot of rehab centers over there, and yet, in the middle of the night, to them, it's in the afternoon, and to me, it's like, come on, man, it's 2 a.m, you know? So, yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, we got a gal from the UK, and she posted on here that she just recently researched a document about tying up the strong arm so it forces the other one, the weak one, to work again, start again.
Right, that's what our sling does. It uses,
okay.
It actually gives you therapy. The way I designed it, the material that's across the back, I have to have that custom special made because you can't just buy it, and I needed it to do certain things. And when you're actually wearing it, when you're using your good arm, it reproduces the therapy that the therapist was giving it. You know, the therapist would move the muscle just a little bit up and down when working with the arm. And I designed the sling so that there's no stress on the neck, no stress on the muscles that are needed to heal, and it uses the opposite arm to inflict therapy on the affected arm as you use it in a daily basis.
Okay. Incredible. Yeah. Who knows what you're going to come up with next. If you ever find anything to put a warped pinky toe back into place, I'm your man. I've tried everything. I've tried tried to even tape it. In my coma, my toe broke and it healed funny, and I just never had it rebroken and fixed. And it kind of hurts every now and then. You know, the shoe kind of rubs against it. But I don't want to be down for a month.
Yeah.
So, but incredible. Well, hey, I'm not going to hang up on you in case people have questions. I'm going to, if you want to listen, and I'm so grateful you joined in tonight. I'm going to put you on hold, and you'll still be able to listen from where you are. And we thank you for your invention, Robert. We need more inventions because, you know, it's those simple things that really make the difference in people's lives. And I see a lot of callers in the room tonight. If you did want to talk, you're going to have to press the one button, and it raises your hand. And so I'm going to bring up this next caller. I was going to take a quick break and play something. I'm not, because we have a hand up. And you are from the 320 area code, 320.
Hello.
Can you hear us? Hello. How are you?
Very good. This is Peter Heckerel. I have been catching up with you guys every week for the last few weeks. I just caught the last end of Robert's invention there. And there's a lot of aids. Most of those answers are literally right in front of your face. They really are. If you can think outside the box, you got it made.
You have to sometimes, and who better to know than us? Because, sometimes it's hard to get motivated to do that, but when you're in enough pain or see someone hurt, that's when these incredible things happen. And, So where is the 320? What state's that from?
That's Minnesota, about 60 miles west of Minneapolis.
So how are support services in Minnesota?
They could use some assistance. I've been going over the protocol and whatnot with other individuals online that they're trying to establish. And, put it this way, in 2009 I got hit by the light rail train and was out for maybe 14 months. In five different hospitals or facilities. But while at those facilities, they have what they call a caddy waiver here, which is, for physical mobility impairments. They had somebody come out and do all the paperwork on that, so it was ready to go. Somebody from the Brain Injury Association came by and got me on a TBI waiver, so I would have home health aid and whatnot. I couldn't even walk to the John or put my arm over my head for about 2 years. So they were pretty efficient. Once you get the ball rolling, you got workers all over the place walking you through everything. Whereas I had like five brain injuries, and going back to like 89, absolutely nothing. I was out of a coma for 3 days. They sent me home. I couldn't remember my address or phone number for 5 or 6 years. If I went around the block, I would have been lost. But they just kind of kicked you to the curb, which was odd because Clinton had signed the Brain Injury Act a year before, and it was mandatory that they do it differently, and everybody just ignored it. So,
do you know Billy Golfus over there?
Billy, what was the last name?
Golfus. He was one of the reasons that your state ended up with a TBI waiver. He's an activist. If you guys ever get a chance, Billy broke his head.
I know. I remember I met him down at the U and watched his movie once early on. I had a little bit of an advantage because I worked in psychiatry when I was in the Army. And there's like 30 psychiatrists in my unit, and most of them didn't even pick up on this. But because of their resources, I got referred to a good neurotherapist and whatnot, and that bounced me back around and probably within 6 weeks once I got going with it. And that's kind of the big thing out here now is neurotherapy, which just about nobody seems to know about. But it's been around for 25, 30 years, the VA's been doing it since the 50s, yet they're not letting, giving that treatment to anybody, and it's so damn effective, it's ridiculous. It really is. It's just, excuse me?
How's it work? How does that treatment work?
Well, it's not unlike what you'd see on a website called Lumosity. It's kind of like you're playing video games of sorts, but in fact, you know, you have a few, what you call sensors stuck to your skull, you know, to pick up what your brain activity is doing. So you're watching on the screen what your brain's doing as you're trying to re-manipulate your brain waves into the proper levels, and they do move, and once they move to a certain place, they stay there. It's kind of like reestablishing neural nets. It's kind of a, some of its eyes open, some of its eyes closed, but it really focuses on getting things like your alpha wave back in order so you get quality sleep. You can, that and what they call behavioral ophthalmology, get your eyes working, right, because it uses up a lot of brain power just to process your vision, about half of it if it's working right. So if it isn't, it's very draining just to process your vision. You know, straighten out all those little things, and all of a sudden all the big things aren't so big anymore. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's fairly simple. And I'd,
yeah,
take
the name again so they can post it in the chat, say the name for folks.
Neurotherapy, or my name?
The name of the, it's just Neurotherapy, so.
Neurotherapy, and you can find everything you need to know about it on QEEG.com. That would be Dr. Nash's website. He's the national director of all neuroservice providers. And that neuroservice meaning brain injury related, PTSD, ADHD, hyperactivity. I mean, whatever it is, you'll find it there. And if you can't find a resource in your state, he'll find one for you because he knows them all, literally. So it's a very good asset to have, especially if no one ever told you about it before because it's right in front of your face, but they don't announce these things. So, you know how that goes.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because, you know, for the eyes, I can't remember the gal's name, but a number of years ago, I met a gal, and she runs a company down in Australia called, I want to say, Neurological Vision Rehabilitation. And I think, look at Australia, but she's had this for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she came here, this stuff, and it corrects these eyes. It brings them back in the line, just lights, these little lights, and they do this training. And I had her, she came in, we set up a bunch of things in the hospitals. Not one of the hospitals picked it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's bioptic training is what you're talking about. It's
correct.
To get your eyes to be in line with each other, because if one isn't, you know, you're obviously going to see a distorted vision. You start walking into walls because it looks like where it is, but it's not. You know, it's kind of like shutting one eye, how things shift side to side. You got to figure, if your brain's bouncing back and forth in your skull, your eyeballs are stuck in a socket. So they're just getting the backs of them yanked on by the nerve. And sometimes it'll distort the eye, the back wall of the eye, and split the picture too many ways. So you got 16 in one and 4 in the other. You know, all kinds of different things can happen. You know, it's anybody's guess, but it's quite retrainable and very simple, really, no matter how complicated it might seem.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's not complicated at all. When she explained how they do it, I was just like, you got to be kidding.
No, it's just simple muscle coordination. It's, you know, make sure the right knows what the left is doing, so to speak, as opposed to one wandering off and or being out of alignment. Those therapies are out there. Even the Brain Injury Association here, you know, was like, what are you talking about? Having had done this before, so I knew exactly what to do and when, so I just basically jumped to it myself. But, you know, they were a little in the dark even to this day, and it's like, this has been around for 20 years. I got them on the news 3 times. You know, you guys not paying attention or something? Because, you know, even state aid will pay for it. So it's got credibility. You know, I've never had a problem with that. Medical assistance picked it up from day one. And that was like in 1996. So.
Wow. Yeah, no, Minnesota has been, you know, leading, you know, one of the leading states, you know, providing pretty decent services, or at least availability to services, you know, finding out good services there.
Every neuropsychologist will tell you something different. Some of them will say, oh, it can't be done. And they're still saying that, probably to preserve their own value. But, in fact, you know, we got the Sister Kinney Institute, we got the Mayo Clinic and all that. Very few of them get into that, but there is. Compared to a decade and a half ago, there's probably 200 or 300 neurotherapists floating around the state. And just about every state's got them. They're just not readily available. They're not as common as your average MD. So,
right. Your Brain Injury Association, I know, is no longer affiliated with Brain Injury. So did they become an alliance? Do you know what's going on in your state as far as that? How that?
Yeah, I think it's the Brain Injury Alliance now. And that's pretty much national. And it really hasn't changed much, although they do spend a lot of time. They've asked me to address the legislature and several city councils on their behalf because I'm probably the highest functioning survivor they've ever seen, considering looking at my 8-foot-thick pile of medical records. You're just like, you got to be kidding, man. You don't even look like anything's wrong with you. And it's like, healing's a skill, and it really is. And I learned a lot about it from bodybuilding and powerlifting and all kinds of different diet stuff way before any of this happened. So I kind of had a leg up where most don't. I guess that, and I'm just bullheaded, and I don't quit, so.
Yeah, the hard-headedness will keep us determined. Yeah, I give you that. I'm kind of hard-headed when I get my mindset on certain things. So. It's good and bad things.
it's easy to get frustrated because everybody says it can't be done, and to me that's the magic words. Oh, really? Well, just watch then. And I haven't yet to fail on that accord, but it is frustrating for the average person or someone that's, you know, where this is so, well, to everybody it's a whole different world. But, you know, to someone who is kind of a quiet type or, you know, not into athletics or anything like that, to them it would be mind-boggling beyond comprehension. So. It kind of depends what your former self was.
Right.
Some of that will stick, some of it doesn't.
What would be your advice to survivors? Because, you know, it's a nice topic. You know, we're kind of talking about, you know, injury, you know, is bad enough, but circumstances of not being understood and then having to go through a system. What's your best advice for people that are feeling so let down, so, you know, what do I do next? Did they just wish, you know, they were dead, or even think, contemplate it. You know, I contemplated
it. Yeah, that's common.
What's your advice for them to get over it? That it's not them, it's the system, you know, be determined. Go
well,
on.
It's the system. It is the system, for one, and it's false expectations. They expect your family to understand. My family, they've been around this for 26 years. They still don't get it, and they never will. And if you expect them to, don't hold your breath for it. The thing to do is, if you have the capacity, is find your own answers, and don't wait for anybody to step up for you. Make your own phone calls. Call the Department of Disability. Call whoever you got to call. And just call a social worker for human services. Usually they'll send someone over that'll explain everything available and get the ball rolling in some direction. Because just sitting thinking about it and feeling hopeless, nobody's that hopeless. If you got fingers and can dial a phone, you got better than most. And all you got to do is ask. They'll never yell at you for that. And they may not quite get it, but they know someone who does, at least. But if you were waiting for, that would probably be the worst mistake I made, is wait for someone to understand what's not understandable. You see, you can't expect a non-survivor to even have a clue what this is like. It's totally way in another galaxy. So pick up.
I got asked when a non-survivor, a professional, says, "I understand," what's your reaction to that?
Actually, I'd say, I got some swampland to sell you. Because there's no way in hell they could understand. Their best understanding of it is what other professionals can interpret to them. And you're talking about somebody trying to interpret a liquid situation with a calculator. You understand? Can't be done.
Right.
There's no way to nail that down. There's no single explanation. There's any one of 50 on any given point, basically, because everybody's as different as a fingerprint. And they say, well, we can understand this, but what do? They go right to the DSM-4 and follow those recommendations when they're 45 years old in the first place. That's what every doctor does, because that's their realm of not being liable. If they follow that, they can't be sued. So they don't think outside the box. Recently, I had a physician, Dr. Hambidge. He had passed away about 3 weeks ago. He has been in practice since World War II, seen every kind of shell shock, brain injury, you name it, PTSD, the whole bit. He thought outside the box, and he could afford to, because he was far enough in his career where, you know, I don't care what the MA says, take away my license. I've already been retired for 20 years, you know. But unless you got a guy that's got the stones to actually go with a what you would call unpopular or out of and rock the boat a little bit, because you are, every neuropsychologist on the planet will maintain that this therapy doesn't work when there's, 5.5 million people that'll tell them otherwise, and most of them are 5-year-olds with hyperactivity that aren't that way anymore. Because you can correct any one of a slew of different disorders this way. And it's quite accredited. So when a regular physician tells me, oh, yeah, I can understand that, it's like, no, you can't. Let me put a nerve block on your right side for a month and see how you understand that. Because that's what we're talking about, in a sense. You know, let me take out your left hemisphere function for 6 years and cut your REM sleep for a year and a half. We'll see what you would turn out like. You know?
Absolutely.
There's no way they can comprehend what the meaning of that even is, and you sure can't get it out of a book.
Yeah, you can't. And I found a very similar, it's probably very similar, I found it's called Interactive Metronome. And,
mm-hmm.
And I actually got licensed, because it's so damn expensive, I got licensed to perform, you know, the rehabilitation, because I was a psychologist before. Well, I still am. I refuse to practice under how they practice.
Exactly.
It actually helped my impulsivity. And it just times our brain. It's all about timing yourself. It's common.
Well,
no one ever timed it, though.
Well, I understand the metronome theory. But in my opinion, it's not so much timing. What it does do, you know, as a step one, is teach your brain how to focus again. If you can do that, then you got a better grasp on everything. It's just kind of not firing in and out indiscriminately anymore. It's predictable and gives you a certain element of control on top of that. So everything isn't impulsive. You're not working on response. You have some precognition going on here where you see what's coming a little bit, you know.
Yeah. You learn to control your mind, body at the same time. It's amazing what we can do.
Exactly. That's, you know, people say I'm nuts, but, you know, Dr. Nash confirmed this 8 years after I did it anyway. Is, for example, after I got a really bad motorcycle accident in 89, they said, oh, you can't go to the gym for 2 years. I just looked at them and said, yeah, sure. That's the first place I went. And I bounced back astronomically fast because my body was forced to learn how to focus, keep track of things, concentrate, have a perspective and a schedule, all these things. And 8 years later, Nash tells me, if you wouldn't have done that, you'd probably be blowing spit bubbles in a corner someplace to this day because you made it jump out of, there's no laying around waiting for stuff to get well. If your brain doesn't think it needs it, it doesn't fix it. It's that simple. So if you're bad at it, do it anyway, cautiously.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. but keep doing it. I'm not saying go try to run 10 miles after hip surgery because that ain't going to happen. But that doesn't mean you can't walk around the block. It doesn't mean a month from now you're not going to be jogging a mile. And maybe 6 months from now you'll hit the 10-mile run if you want. But you got to start somewhere, you know, keep the enzymes going because that's what makes your body repair itself.
Oh, absolutely, you got it to keep moving. And exercise is key. But it's, yeah, and I'm not one to talk. That is my next stage in my rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta keep things moving inside.
Well, I think
like your blood circulation, right?
Yep, blood circulation processes out scar tissue, tells you what's working, what isn't. Also keeps your support muscles in place. So if you got neck and back injuries, those vertebrae aren't sliding all over. They kind of stay where they're supposed to. But a really good effect of that is endorphins. I mean, I can almost set my watch by when I leave the gym and my endorphins get kicked in. It's exactly 72 hours and 40 minutes before they wear off. And I'm emotionally stable for that whole time. But as soon as they drop, my mood goes, my body energy goes, all of it. That's just me, but it seems to be a pretty common cycle. You know,
absolutely.
Runner's high. I mean, why do you think they go and do the 26 miles? Because they feel like $1 million for the next 10 days. That's why, you know. But you can get that a lot of different ways. You don't have to, you know, any kind of exercise, even a walk around the block, if you're as bad a shape as I was in, would do it. Seems like way more than a lot, but it does have its effect. Get your body going, get your metabolism up, makes your brain a little more active, makes you eat a little more and better, you know. There's a lot of benefits to everything. I guess if I was going to say anything at all, it's make your own phone calls. Don't wait for anybody to help you, because even if they do, chances are they're talking out of policy and procedure, not what's actually going on. And, you know, you really got to take the initiative. No one can make you do it. It's no different
than... And watch out for the people that are only in it for the money, because you'll get hurt every time.
Oh, yeah. They'll suck you right in, and they will just run you through all kinds of stuff that seems so redundant. I've had that happen more times than I can count. Well, this will do good for your neurological health. It's like, I don't need to write stuff down in a notebook for 4 hours a day and then do the same thing tomorrow for 6 months for anybody. You know?
Well,
because
I'm a believer in journaling, but just notes so you can look back to see your improvement, not at, I was a little obsessive, but I couldn't see my own improvement for a while.
I'm talking about scheduling daily activities and remembering dates and things like that. You know, I mean, that's just way too much work. What they're doing is training people to be unproductive. Essentially, they're not making them go out and do anything for themselves. You know, you want to sit around and wait for your medical transportation to show up on this day at this time, and then go here, here, and here. It's like you're being toted around in a shopping cart. And what are you actually doing that's better than what you did yesterday? You know,
right.
Try something new every day. It doesn't matter how small. You know, even if it's, you know, sit down, draw a picture. I couldn't do that for a while, and I was an illustrator for years. You know, and it took me 2 weeks, and all of a sudden, bang, it's all back where it's supposed to be. but you have to wake things up, because God knows what they did to make you sit around too long and wait so they feel safe or unliable for whatever might happen to you when it's you you're talking about. I mean, I'm not the lay around type. You know, if they say I can, I'm like, watch me. You know, because I've heard this so many times, and you've been proven wrong every single one. Not a couple, but all of them. So that just went right over my head. And if you say don't do it, it means I probably can. You just don't want the liability. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and that's what happened with my very first support group when I was trying to find a sponsor. You know, I thought I needed a sponsor. I don't know why I thought that. But I was told, no, you're not ready. I was told, we're not ready. It's because there was no money in the way I was going to do it. And I did it anyway.
What kind of support group?
I do brain injury support groups, but they're all peer-led. Every group has its own board of directors. They make their own decisions. They own themselves. You know, if they want to go to the Brain Injury Association, you know, no holding you back. I'm not going to sue you. But you empower people to take the lead in their own lives, and they can do amazing things.
Well, exactly. They don't like to be read. A brain injury survivor does not like to be led around on a leash like he can't make a decision for himself or herself. That will piss me off faster than anything in the world. And you start talking to me like I don't know what I'm talking about, when it's quite the opposite most of the time. You know.
What happens, though, is they tell us that, and if we're lucky enough to still be married or have relationships, our relationships believe that. People, I see them believing this in themselves. They lose hope. And it's an awful thing to see people lose hope. And, that's no life, to have no hope and to be stuck. Because you may not be able to do what you did, but why can't you do something better?
Well, a lot of the things that I used to do, I actually do better, because I have a different perspective. Have you ever heard of Dr. Jasper's report on the 9 types of intelligence?
Yes, I have, actually.
Right.
I don't know much about it, but I've seen it a few places.
Well, it's pretty simple. It's just, you know, 90% of the country is basically linguistic thinkers, right-handed, thinking print, pretty black and white or absolute thinkers, your basic bureaucrat mentality. But there's 8 other kinds, and when you get a brain injury, depending on where it is, part of one of those is kind of oppressed for a while, but your brain, due to the natural course of compensation, develops one of the other redundant systems instead to make up for it. So you're not really walking around with an empty hand or a few missing cards. You just got cards no one ever knew was in the game before. And it's quite interesting, because you'll find that just because you're not what you used to be doesn't mean you're not just as good, and sometimes even better, because you're using a part of your brain that is just not adapted yet, because your primary education and all your actions have been focused in one direction since preschool, and all of a sudden, okay, I can't remember words or math, but you know what? I can look at that engine and take it apart inside my head for some reason. Just because all of a sudden that's your visual side of your brain has picked up the slack and developed itself. And then that's kind of what happened to me. And then when I got to Dr. Nash, which took about 8 years, then after about 6 weeks of that training, 3 hours a week, I got what I had lost back too. So I wound up with more than I had in the first place in the end. And then I did that 4 more times. So
yeah.
It gets a little tough to follow, but, you know, there's no such thing. You might have a certain area deficit or impairment, but I guarantee you there's another one that's coming up right behind it or next to it to make up for it. And once you read Jasper's report, it's actually only about 1.5 pages long. It just kind of labels them and tells them what they entail, each certain type of intelligence out of the 9. And you'll find out you probably got, okay, well, I didn't used to do this, but I do this a lot now instead of doing so much of that, if that makes sense.
It does.
You know, it's like a bone that breaks, heals heavier in that spot and will never break in the same place twice. Same principle, except now you're talking your nervous system, which is a lot more complicated, and you got a lot more avenues to do that in. So it's all kind of fascinating to me now. And people will say, well, wouldn't it be nice if you never got a brain injury? And I said, hell, I would have never had it any other way. Because
yeah, I'm at that point finally. It was one of the better things that has happened in my life. It's made me a better person for me.
Well, yeah, and it also made me investigate certain directions of doing things that I wouldn't have occurred to me before. I wouldn't have even come close. I would have just wound up being a 9-to-5er and probably wound up being not unlike some disgruntled postal worker after a while or something. But, you know, now I got variety in 10 levels every day. You know, if I'm not building houses, I'm inspecting them. I know every trade there is. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's not even what I was trained in. I just picked it up because it was all of a sudden easy for me. So, and it wasn't before. Now it is. And it's kind of fascinating because it's constantly a liquid situation, but it's always, there's always growth, always. There's always something new that comes around that's interesting, and I got this insatiable appetite for learning, so I just keep doing it, and they keep giving me free rides to schools, and I keep taking them. So.
Absolutely. I wish I had the patience to. I've gotten myself so busy that I would like to get a degree in something besides psychology and theology, but I'm where I'm at, and I'm okay with it. I think this is my destiny, and it took a slam to the head to get me to see it, because my biggest problem in my life is that my perception changed. You know, I went from
Well, your world got bigger.
Right.
Actually.
You know, mm-hmm. That's how it is, to seeing things from a perspective that I never knew existed.
Well, yeah, doing a job like that, that's a pretty narrow existence. It doesn't leave you a lot of room for thinking, but all of a sudden, if you went from that type of linguistic thinking into something visual and health and outdoor oriented and all that, you know, your whole perspective changes. All of a sudden you go to the office, you feel like you're stuck in a box. Because life's bigger out there, you know. I really couldn't limit myself that way now. If I had to sit behind a desk at a computer all day like my brother does, I'd probably go nuts. I really would. There's just not enough variety. Or a stimulus, even.
Right, absolutely. Well, Peter, I want to thank you very much. Don't go nowhere. I'm going to put you on hold because we got a couple other callers to bring on, and just keep doing what you're doing because, it's what we need, and we need more people doing it.
Somebody's got to do it first. That's kind of what's stuck in my head for the last 20 years. That's the main reason I didn't give up, because if someone doesn't succeed, who else is going to try, right?
No one. No one's going to try. And if it isn't
exactly
one of us, they're not going to do it because it's important to us.
Paving the street. I always like doing stuff the hard way, so.
Yeah.
But,
all right. Well, thank you so much. And keep in touch. And that was Peter, and he's from Minnesota. And, you know, my last words to Peter is make sure you stay connected to survivors, because I think over the years that has been our, as far as survivors, that's been our biggest mistake, is we've kept our community built. And I like the exercise thing, and I want to share a link. I'm going to take a quick commercial break here, so I want to share a link, because I do exercise, but I should do it more than 2 days a year. Actually, I do it a little more than 2 days a year, and I'm inviting everyone out there who's listening and can find three friends. And I know in the beginning of my interview that was hard to find three friends. Well, they don't even have to be friends. Find three people, and I'm being serious. Even though I know a lot of people, there's not a lot of people that I call friends. I've learned to be real cautious with what I let my mind think is a friend. But we do an event called HoopFest, and it is absolutely the largest event of its kind, and we have a division within that series, and it is specifically for folks with disability, and we have brain injury type events, and I'm going to put the link there right now, and all that you have to do is get here. We're developing some host homes where folks will house four people. And what it is, it's the world's largest three-on-three. And I just put it on there, and it's HoopFest. And you have to pre-register through HoopFest.net. But they waive the fees for us, and we have set Guinness Book records the last 3 years. And it's going to be bigger and bigger. And I want the whole world of folks with disabilities getting together to play. Because you get to know people better playing with them than you do other things. Other things are important too, but we have to learn to play again. And it's a lot of fun. You're competing. It's outdoors. We have all of our courts in one area. And it's 42 square blocks, this thing. Not everybody there's with disability, but our little section, we have a great little section. You get to meet some advocates from around the world. We have people from Mexico, Canada. I don't think we had any people with disabilities from Great Britain yet. Maybe Annie and those folks over there can get some teams. I imagine getting here is a little harder. But it is an incredible experience that I guarantee you will remember forever. And you don't play to win. You play to have fun. And basketball is a very competitive sport. But this is one of the most incredible things that I think that folks with disabilities that we have done and get together. And we're doing a snowboard team this year. And I have to tell you, we've competed twice, which is fun. It was 22 below zero on one of our competitions. And I think I used to be able to handle that in the past. I'm telling you what, that was cold. I mean, I don't know how to describe it, man. I froze. It felt like my fingers were going to fall off. After the break here, I am going to bring on Cheryl. And Cheryl is the motivator I was talking about, and her name is Cheryl Green. As folks know, after my injury, I started writing some songs. And I just got back from a European tour over the winter. And I have now sold 9 of my songs, or at least other bands. And my hope is that the royalties in the end, you know, all you need is a couple hits, keep what we have going on and offer money to other organizations. Always survivor-based. I believe that a group of survivors, we're going to conquer anything that anyone ever thought we could. If we got all of our great minds together, imagine the power we have. And the last night before we got cut off, we were talking about a survivor conference, and I think that would be a great idea. And I'm going to go back to Christmas 2006. Last year was Christmas Eve 2006, probably around 11 o'clock. Got out of the psych ward because my then wife has more than she could handle, and she said I was going to kill myself. There I am. And mind you, she left me for many, many months at that point. So I got out of the hospital, came back. Most everything good that I had or we had was gone. She decided that was hers. And there I sat with the gun cocked. And this is, I want to share the very first song I wrote. And this is when I was still a pastor. This is when I was the Pastor Craig man before he went to Insane from Pain. And I just want to share this with you. These were the thoughts that were going through my head that night, Christmas Eve, 2006. And I'll be back with you right after this. I got to get a glass of water. I'm getting a little dry. Thank you.
I contemplate about the things I do. Well, I can't seem to recognize. Why can't I see beyond these eyes? And I think I need a savior like you. One who talks to me. Someone who sees everything I see.
Realized he already did, and took me many years after that to realize that. But he did me a favor. Everything that needed to be was, because if I would have stayed with my wife, I wouldn't be doing this. She's very monetary, and that's not a bad thing. That's kind of how the world is, and that's not where he wanted me. And so I am going to call Cheryl. I'm dialing it right now. She was on the line. We lost her. So, whoops. And here we go. Be on here. Calling her right now.
Hello?
Hi, is this Cheryl?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Cheryl. This is Craig with Brain Injury Radio. I'm sorry, I saw you there, and then I had to go get some water. I think I was going to choke to death. My esophagus is sticking.
Nice.
How are you tonight?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good, and this is Cheryl Green, and I'm going to let you tell your story. I think I told you, I am running a little late, but your biggest thing was mentors and communities, and I still find that to be true. The communities what's saving my life right now every day, and so share your story with everybody.
Sure. How long do I have?
How long do you need?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not good with math, but I'll just go ahead and talk.
Yeah, just go for it. Yeah, and then
I just, you know, just listening to the things that you said in the first part of the show and the people you were talking to, I mean, it's just amazing how similar everybody's story is, even though the injuries can be different and we're different ages and different parts of the country, and we just have this similar story. It's a little bit scary, actually, but you know, I definitely did get shuffled through the system at first, and I had a neurooptometrist, because like the other caller was saying, my eyes were not actually pointing in the same direction, and I had a vision therapist and a counselor, and all of them thought that I had a traumatic brain injury. But I didn't have a single medical doctor tell me that for 18 months, and that was because I went to a neurologist because I was starting to have seizures all of a sudden, and he's the first doctor who said, well, come on now, you had a brain injury. And, I mean, I was going to see the doctor every week and then, you know, once a month. And no one would ever, it's just, oh, there's that crazy girl. There's that guy. We don't know why she's still dizzy. We don't know why she gets lost and can't read a map and can't tell time. And just, you know, and I feel like I got quite the short end of the stick, but in the same way that a lot of people do. And I had two neuropsych evaluations. They both decided I was just emotionally unstable. But what really was interesting to me was they never did any testing specific to brain injury or traumatic brain injury. They just did their, you know, general testing and decided I was crazy. And I had someone on my rehab team send me to a support group for 13-year-olds and their mothers. And, you know, I'm in my late 30s. And this is all the support that I'm getting is, here, go to this group because I've heard of it, so you have to go. And I had no peers in that group. I had no one I could relate to. They were, I mean, I could have been the mom of some the kids in the group. It was really, really awful. I mean, I could go on and on with the ludicrous stories of the things the neuropsych said, but I really was coming to realize I need a different direction for this. You know, either the medical people are either ignoring me and not believing that I'm having the troubles I'm having, or all they want to do is just fix you, cure you, make you better. It's just, you know, get in here and take this pill and let's just draw your blood and, you know, do this exercise. But for me, it's really more about getting back to life and being satisfied by life and being excited with your life, whether you still have impairments or not. So when you just go into this medical setting and all they want to do is fix little isolated parts of you, but not do it in a way that makes any sense to you or is enjoyable to you, you know, they don't get very far, and then they blame it on us. Well, she's non-compliant. Well, she's got an executive dysfunction. You know, and it's just so much disconnect. And what happened to me, where things really started to turn around, even though my impairments were not getting better at the time, my counselor turned me on to the book I'll Carry the Fork by Kara Swanson. I'm sure you've read that. Have you read that, Craig?
We tried to get her in our program. We have our saying, we try to get her to come to our conference this year, and they shut it down. They didn't think she was appropriate. She's wonderful.
Oh, there is nobody more appropriate. Kara, I mean, I can get pretty hyperbolic, but, you know, I read her book. It was the first book that I could read. You know, reading was very difficult and very painful for me physically because my, you know, my visual processing was off and my eyes were not aligned, which, you know, I figured was from a brain injury, although my doctors, you know, didn't seem to agree with that. But her book totally just changed my direction. I realized this is not about filling out my worksheets and, you know, making my little charts on the wall. She just really changed it. And I went on, started reading her blog, and she has these in-depth conversations with people on her blog. And I sent an email to her publisher saying, you know, hallelujah, I read a book. This is the first book I've read. And not only is that a great triumph. And by the way, I have two master's degrees, so to be at a point where I can't even read a book, you know, this is telling you something. But I said, you know, not only am I excited by my accomplishment, but the book is really saving me. And so the publisher sent it to Kara, and Kara, just out of the goodness of her heart, just took me under her wing. And we had these huge, long email conversations, so deep, so heartfelt. And she really became a mentor to me. And that's what started to bring me out of this sense of isolation and this shell. And then I joined, I tried a couple other support groups, but I joined Birdsong here in Portland, Oregon, and that stands for Brain Injury Referral and Resource Development. And, I mean, what an amazing collection of mentors, people who want to, you know, they'll show you where to go, and if you're not ready to go there, they'll come step back to where you are and walk with you. It's just absolutely amazing. And, you know, Joan from Birdsong, I call her my mama bird, she'll call me. She'll call me up, Cheryl, you're out of control. Here's what I need you to do. And I didn't even know I was out of control. And so she just really mentors me, and it's so wonderful. So
you know Had then, right?
I do know Had. He wasn't at the meeting.
He's in the chat room right now. He's in the chat room and he's listening. So.
Oh, he's in the chat room. Hi, Had. I have never logged on and got on the chat. It's so hard for me to listen and to read and keep track. And the chat moves so fast. But I have in the past sometimes turned the sound off and read the chat, and I see Had in there. How's it going, Had? Being involved with Kara is through emails and conversations, and then getting involved with Birdsong really deeply. And, I mean, I'm on the board of Birdsong now. It's really a place that focuses on your strengths and really showed me, you know, who cares if you can't read a map and who cares if you keep falling asleep in the middle of the day? You have something that we want. You have something to give. And we have something to give you, too. And that sense of equality, as opposed to what your other caller said, those doctors, well, I read it in the DSM, so I understand what you're going through. Oh, it's so patronizing. But in these peer-led support groups, you don't get that kind of patronizing crud. I did a good job holding back an inappropriate word. It's crud. but what I started doing, even before I was really fully, you know, I don't know, staying awake or doing much of anything, I started making films. I was on one of the shows on this Blog Talk Radio, and I don't remember when it is or who the host was, but I talked about my films there, and at the time I was making comedy films about my own experiences, at showing the reality of what's really, really hard, but doing it through humor, because otherwise people are not going to listen. They don't want to hear it. Oh, you're just an angry disabled person, but if you do it through humor, they want to watch and they want to talk. But it was about me. It was still the Cheryl Show. And so because I have received so much from my mentors and so much from my community, I have decided again to make another change and turn it around. So I'm doing two things right now. One is I'm making a documentary, and it is about artists with brain injury in the Pacific Northwest, because this filmmaking and this art brought me back to life. It also did strengthen some of my deficits. I did get better at planning. I did get better at learning how to be polite to people and not cuss so much and say rude things, and, you know, how to use a clock. It helped me with impairments, but more than anything, it gave me a community, and it gave me a way to interact with people outside the brain injury community. So my documentary, I'm interviewing these other folks with brain injuries. Well, why do you make art? What does it do for you? How do you make art? What do you do if you're having a seizure while you're trying to make art? So we've done a bunch of interviews. I have a blog online where I sort of highlight all sorts of people with brain injuries or different disabilities who want to write in and share their poetry and raps and writing and essays and pictures. And that's called whoamitostopit.com. The movie is called Who Am I to Stop It? And so, gosh, if anybody who's listening tonight wants, you know, to post a story or a poem or anything up on that blog, you know, go to that blog and you can contact me, and I'd love to have you. But that's really building an enormous sense of community through that. And the other project I'm working on, and I don't know how... people tell me I'm so busy, but really I'm not managing to do all these things. I got a grant from a regional sort of city-based arts funding organization, and this grant is to work with other people to make their own films. And the reason I decided to do that is because someone once told me late last year, wow, I'm really glad that you're in this world, Cheryl, because you're a voice for all those people who can't speak for themselves. And I know in that person's heart that was a compliment, but to me it was just tragic. It was, this is what people do when they don't see someone with a disability, because people with disabilities are hidden away, either stuck at home or stuck in some kind of supported living facility. Non-disabled community doesn't see them, so they just assume they're not there or assume that they don't have anything to say. And the reason I make films is because I have access to the resources to do that. I have training in this kind of stuff, and I have good networking, and I write grants and I get money. And I also get support from people in my family who just, you know, give me financial support until I'm, you know, back up and fully running. The reason other people with brain injuries don't make films is because they don't, well, either they don't care and they don't want to, or they don't have access to the resources that I have. And so when you say, oh, you, Cheryl, you speak for the people who can't speak, that hurts me. Because it's not that people can't speak for themselves, and it's not that people don't have something to say. They do. Everybody who's ever called the show has an amazing story. Everybody who writes in the chat has an amazing story. And all my friends here in the Portland area with all levels of impairment and all levels of injury have amazing stories to share, and nobody ever hears them, or people don't know how to hear them. And so in response to that person, I'm doing this project where I'm working one-on-one with people. I've got a little tablet, sort of like an iPad, but with a nicer camera. And we're planning a short film, but it's their film. It's not going to be my story that they get to be the actor in. We're planning together from start to finish. What do you want to film and how do you want it to be made? We're going to film it together on the tablet, and we're going to edit it together on the tablet. And it's pretty radical because, generally speaking, you know, you can make your own film, but somebody else is going to edit it. The expert is going to edit it because they know how to tell the story. And the woman who edits my films, she must share a brain with me. I think she's the most brilliant editor. She gets my story across better than I could. But I still want these folks who I'm working with to have the satisfaction of saying, no, it was my choice. This is beautiful. It's my choice, and it's the story I want to tell exactly how I want to. So I'm mentoring them through the process of making their own films. And they'll do as much or as little as they want, and I'll do as much or as little as they want me to do. So that's my story.
That's awesome. Yeah, and it's actually asked, because I know Had, and I've seen, I've heard now, I've noticed Bird Tongue. I have to be honest, are you guys affiliated with Brain Injury Alliance at all?
No, we're actually not. We are a local nonprofit with a little board, and we don't have any direct affiliation with any other group. We have folks from other groups, individuals who might, you know, work with us, come to our support groups, or be some kind of advisor to the board. But I don't believe we have anyone from the Brain Injury Alliance who participates in that way.
Oh, well, yeah, because that's kind of, they kind of scare me.
Yeah, so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm the alternative to that, and I've just recently been recognizing by, you know, paying more attention that, yeah, you guys are very similar in what we're doing, Survivor, Ran, and
yeah.
Record. And so, yeah, I definitely will make sure, because I'm not sure I have all your groups on our national map. I will make sure to get on there.
That's awesome.
And I don't want to say anything bad, but it's all about the money for those organizations, and it bugs
me,
because when the money's gone, they don't care.
Yeah, I actually, well, I'm going to take a little risk here, but I'm just being honest. I was very, very informally invited to maybe present at the conference, at the Brain Injury Alliance conference next month, And that was back in July. It was a very informal offer. And so I wrote them and said, wow, 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 thank you, yes, 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 whatever you want. And I didn't hear back, and I wrote again, and I didn't hear back. And so I checked in a few days ago, and I heard back, well, we didn't hear from you, so we filled your slot. I was like,
yeah.
Wait,
yeah, see,
oh, but you did hear back from me. Oh, crud. And, you know, I thought this is an opportunity, you know, that maybe I could have had. But at the same time, I thought, well, come on now. You know I'm the one with the brain injury. If you haven't heard from me and you expect to hear from me, you might want to pop me a line, you know, just drop me a line, you know, maybe make a quick phone call, drop a quick email. And that's what I do for all my peers who I know have a brain injury. If they're not responding, I'll remind them, hey, did you get my email? Hey, do you remember we're in a conversation? I think it's, and I do that because I'm there. As a peer, I need reminders to get back to you and to do this and to do that. And I sort of felt a little slighted, like, well, if you didn't hear back from me, you should have checked, because I'm the one who's supposed to have the memory impairment here. So I guess I'm not going to be part of the conference this year. And that it sort of hurt my feelings for it to go that way.
Because it's your chance to reach other survivors, to let them know what there is other stuff. And I participate in things I don't want to when I know I can reach survivors, because if we don't reach them, they don't know we're here. And
that's right.
A peer
group
is incredible.
I do screenings of my films. I have two comedy films that are out, the documentary we just started shooting. But I do screenings around town, and, I mean, we get, you know, standing room only. All the chairs are filled. People are sitting on tables. People are standing up all over the place. They're eating it up, because it's all these people with brain injuries who are seeing themselves. Well, no, see, now I sound like that other person. I'm not them, but I look like them. When you know, you don't get to see people with disabilities in the movies and on TV, and if you do, it's a non-disabled actor pretending to be disabled. We don't, you know, I love the movie The Lookout, but come on, we know he didn't have a brain injury, and you know, that actor did a really smashing job. He did an incredible job, but where are the movies, you know, like Billy's, when Billy broke his head? We need more of those movies where people with brain injuries are the stars of it. And so the house is always packed when I show my films, because it's people saying, hey, you do what I do. I do that. I make those mistakes. I goof off like that. I'm having that trouble communicating with my family. You know, and people really appreciate it. And so I do go around and try to screen my films as much as possible as that, like you said, that alternative way to reach people and show them there is something else. You don't have to sit around and be a patient your whole life. You know, come make some art. Come watch a movie with your friends and laugh and talk to them about it later. I mean, there's so much more that you can do besides sitting around being rehabilitated.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I have a bunch of them, and they're no good. They're just, because I do groups, that's my thing. And so all of our groups put together movies, and they're nothing great, but, you know, they're who we are. And I'm meeting with film director Bill Brown, and he became a friend of mine over the last few years. He shot Dream Rider and then The Hidden Epidemic. And Dream Rider was the movie with Lou Gossett Jr. that he realized he had a brain injury, because he was, you know, they bring the person in, and he was getting to know this kid that had a brain injury that did this bicycle ride, you know, across the country. Uh-huh. And he kept trying to commit suicide during the movie. And, you know, he got really close to him, and that's when he discovered he had a brain injury, and his son had a brain injury who tried to commit suicide because he thought he was on drugs. You know, that's what he assumed. And
wow.
He shot The Hidden Epidemic, and so we're going to shoot some short shock movies. I mean, thank
God.
Gross. I mean, in-your-face movies, because people aren't getting it. So one is going to be about helmets, because I want to pass an enforceable helmet law, because those are preventable. Not all are. And then the other is you know, what it is, you know, what people are seeing, and I'm not quite sure how we're going to depict it, but we may be who we look like, but we're not who we are, and so they're going to be graphic and disturbing
wow.
to people, and I'm pretty excited about it, because he's a professional person, and he can maybe
yeah.
put this concept that I have in my head to that people might get it, and it may not work, but it's worth
it. Oh, no, it's going to work. It's
going
to be great.
And so I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, this is great. Well, you know, I will, I've got your email. I'll email you later with my website. I would really love –